good. For those who want a quick toilet break, 5 minutes, that will do. They're chanting. No, no chanting. We do questions and answers. 5 minutes. So, we have now every evening the Q&A. Okay. Dear Ajahn, Bhagavad has been translated as the Blessed One. May I know what the Blessed One means? He's someone who is blessed to learn from. Thank you. It means, I don't know, many of you, if you've been so engaged in like Western culture, then if you ever sneeze, they say bless you. So Blessed One must be someone who's sneezed. Or you have someone who's had the holy water, and that's a blessing water, so you've been blessed. So it's just one of these Bhagavad. It was literally means Bhaga means Wa means having a lot of times it's having like wealth, having property, having, you know, worth. So it's also somebody, you know, like someone who's substantial. But, you know, it was just used as a word of a praise for somebody. That's why somebody, you know, calls it Lord, the Lord Buddha Bhagavad. But, you know, that's just so old-fashioned when, you know, you're coming from European culture who's Lord this and Lord that. That's why there's one gentleman who comes here, you may know him, is K.C. Wong. And he's a bit sort of eccentric. When he sees me, he says, praise the Lord, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord Buddha. So, that's Bhagavad. It has many different translations. So, whatever word of respect which you want to use. But it has no real main meaning. Why am I afraid to let go of attachment? Ah, that's an excellent question. One of the reasons is because, number one, we're not really quite sure what it might feel like. It's our comfort zone, like our comfort blanket. You know, that's from the Peanuts cartoons. And why am I afraid to let go is because, okay, one of the great stories, that once there were these two monks, and they were the best of friends, and they meditated together, whenever we were together. When they died, one passed away, and because of their great merit, they got reborn in this wonderful heaven realm. You know, because of their good karma. The other one got reborn as a worm in a pile of cow poo. Because, you know, not all monks are sort of good. You know, there's always a couple of bad bricks in a wall. But, you know, if they are monks who I've trained or nuns who I've trained, they've always got the QC, the quality control stamp of approval. But the one who got reborn as a worm in a pile of cow shit, that is quite happy down there. But the other one, you know, your bonds of friendship. You always wondered, what happened to my old friends, you know, from when I was at school together or university together, and sometimes you meet up together, find out what people have been doing. But the one up in heaven, well, I wonder where my friend has been reborn. So up in heaven it has psychic powers, and so he scanned all the heaven realms looking for his best friend. Couldn't find him anywhere there. And he thought, even better than the heaven realm is being born in the realm of human beings, where there's enough, you know, suffering, but not too much, believe it or not. Enough to prompt you and encourage you to let go. Too much happiness, that's just too comfortable. Too much suffering, are you just trying to get by? So this wonderful human realm, we thought, he's been reborn as a human being. So the heavenly being searched all the places for his best friend from former life. Couldn't find him anywhere there. Oh no, maybe because of some bad karma. He's been reborn as one of the higher animals. Maybe like a dog in Australia living in a nice warm house, sleeping all day, you know, because some monks or nuns like to sleep. Oops. Nope, I'll go there. I'll get in trouble. But, see, couldn't find him anywhere there. And higher beings, the higher animals. And they decided to look at the lower animals, couldn't find him there. And thought, well, maybe he's been born as one of the creepy crawlies. And to this heavenly being's utter dismay, he found his best friend had been reborn in a pile of steaming, warm cow poo. Now, if your friend's in trouble, you just can't just hold your nose and go away. You have to help. So he thought, oh my goodness, I have to help my old friend. So this heavenly being appeared in front of the steaming, stinking pile of cow poo and called out, hey worm, worm. And Sittle head pokes out. He said, well, what do you want? And he said, in our previous lives, we were the best of friends. We did everything together. And look, because of your bad karma, you've been reborn in this stinking pile of cow poo. But I've been reborn in heaven. It's wonderful there, a much better form of existence. Come with me. I can take you up into heaven. At which point, the little worm said, what are you talking about? I'm quite happy down here, thank you. It's nice and warm in my pile of cow poo, and it's fragrant. Not only that, it's my food. It's like Singaporeans being reborn in a pile of noodles. I shouldn't go there, but... And... The worm said, ah, no, I'm quite happy here, thank you. No, you must go. It's much better up in heaven. We are friends. And the worm said, well, look, I'll ask you one thing, first of all. Is there any shit up in heaven? Of course not, said the heavenly being. We don't even use that word up in heaven. Well, no poo, no go. And so, you know, you can understand where the worm was coming from. You know, you got used to your cow shit. It's warm. It's your home. You are attached to it. And so the heavenly being thought, well, look, if only I could take that worm up to see for itself, you know, direct experience, as I was saying this afternoon, so you could, a wise worm can experience the Dhamma for itself. So how can I do that? I've got to actually take it there. So the heavenly being, and imagine just what it must be like a heavenly being to put its refined, beautiful hands in a pile of cow shit. Imagine like the Queen of England doing that. For Princess, no, I'm not going there either. Princess died. No, you can't. Friendship was so strong that you had to do that. So he put in and he tried to pull the worm out. And the worm didn't want to go. And worms can be very slippery with all that slimy poo on it. And because it didn't want to go, and because it was really slimy, slippery, the worm wriggled and writhed until it escaped. And the worm went right into the deepest parts of the cow poo. But that heavenly being didn't give up that easily. The heavenly being put its hand again, searched around, and then found it and tried to pull it out again, and it went back in again, pulled it out again, wriggled because it didn't want to go, leave me alone, it went back in again. It's, Hi Ling, how many years have we been going to Singapore now? Is it 17 years, 18 years? For 17, 18 years!
heavenly being was trying to pull the worm out of its pile of cow shit. Every time it didn't want to go. Until the end, the heavenly being had to go up to heaven by himself and leave the worms to the worms of pile of cow food. Why? Because we know no better. It's his heaven. What's wrong with living the lay life? You know, you do well. You got a nice apartment, you can make merry, got a nice wife and kids and stuff for your future. And somebody comes, oh no, come up to jhanas, nibbana. No, I don't want to go. That's called attachment. It's understandable. Why is it so difficult to let go? And why am I afraid to do that? It's the same fear. It's a fear of the unknown. It's the same fear as a person who goes out of jail for the first time. You're not quite sure whether it's worth going. You know, you're happy in jail. So you got used to your shit. That's why I'm so afraid to let go of it. Okay. That's a bit gross story, but I love telling that. People can relate to it so easily. Oh my goodness. Okay. It's kind of weird to ask this question to Ajahn, but I'll ask anyway. Why? If it's weird, just don't do it. Anyway. As a person, there's a time of the month where I become a monster for a few days due to hormonal thingy, PMS. I become highly sensitive, angry over small things, keep on remembering past mistakes and take everything people do personally. Sometimes the sadness is so overwhelming that I feel depressed. I wept, although actually everything in my life is going well, but a few days later I feel fine. My question, how to deal with an emotional roller coaster like this when it happened because of biological reasons? Although it passing just a few days, I find it unbearable and overwhelmed during those few days. So, what to do? You can have all these hormonal additives or whatever. Does that work? I don't know. Anyway. No, what you can do is remember what I said. If you are grumpy, be happy to be grumpy. Because it's out of control. So, when you try and control those times when you feel upset, when you feel sick, when you feel really grumpy, if you try and control it because there must be something wrong, that is the problem. But it's quite obvious. It's out of control. It's hormonal. It's whatever it happens to be. So, it's a great lesson in no will, it's not up to you, it just happens anyway. You know, we asked Ajahn Chah once, what would happen if an enlightened being, an arahat, got bitten by a rabid dog? Would it get rabies? He said, yeah, sure it will. Because it's not nothing to do with a being or a person. Like an arahat can control everything, can actually stop getting sick. But instead, you know, it's just realizing this body's out of control. It does what it needs to do. Can an enlightened being stop dying or stop sickness or stop old age? Of course they can't. They understand it. So, it was one of the stories of the fiercest, toughest monks in the recent times, Ajahn Mahabua. And when I went to visit him for 6 or 7 days, he told his story. And he didn't know I understood Thai perfectly, but this is the story he told, because he was telling it for me. He said this was for the Ajahn Chah Western monk who's just come. And because it was a bit unusual for him to say this, I remembered it and thought it was a wonderful teaching. He said that like many monks in that time, living in the jungles, they would get malaria. It was just, you know, like getting a flu or getting hay fever in Australia. It's just what happens. And there's nothing really you can do about it. So he was having a fit of malaria one day, and he was a tough monk. So when it was a time to do your duties, just because he was sick and not feeling good, that was no excuse. Just like you, if you're feeling a bit sickly and tired, that's no excuse not to clean the toilets and to do the washing up and whatever duties are assigned to you in this Jhana Grove retreat. You just go out and do it. I am strong. I'm not going to give in to this namby-pamby cream puff business. That's because you're sick, you can't go to work. So, in the middle of a fever, he got down. Oh, that's a worm and a pile of shit you're taking out. Is it a worm? Yeah, let it listen to the Dhamma. It might want to go to heaven. So, this little, where am I going? I forgot now what I'm supposed to be doing. Amahabur, yeah, middle of a fever. It was the time for the duties. So, he got up, sweating, shivering, weak. He put on his robes and he took up a broom and he used the power of his mind. He wasn't going to give in. He swept and swept, even though he was sweating and shaking and sweating and They don't make monks like that these days. They don't make nuns like that these days, do they? Nah, come on. So what he did was, Ajahn Mun saw him, his teacher, and he scolded him, you stupid monk, that's not what to do. You know, that he told him, if you have a fever or a sickness, you don't fight it. You don't try and conquer it. That's not the job of Buddhism. You investigate it. Just go back up to your hut, lay down, and get to know sickness. Don't fight it. Know it. It's a wonderful little teaching because so often we like to control things. This isn't the real me. I'm in a bad mood, and that's can't be in a bad mood. A monk's not supposed to be in a bad mood. But when you are, you've got to admit it. So, one of the nice things, you investigate it. Find out what its causes are. And just like the anger-eating monster story, that you learn how to be kind to it. So, you've got sicknesses, you got hormonal stuff, chemical stuff, all types of stuff which is going on. Be kind to it. If you're mindful and kind, not trying to get rid of it, not trying to control it, but just opening the door of your heart, the fact this is what happens when you get old, when you get stuff going in your body, it just happens. So that way, you find actually this when you don't try and get rid of it, when you accept it, the symptoms get much less. So, just let it be. Dogs go woof woof. You can't stop a dog going woof woof. You tell it, dog, noble silence. And you go, woof 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 woof. You can teach dogs some things. There's some really clever dogs. This dog I read about, because some of these dogs in Australia, these Kelpies, they're incredible. This one dog, it's one of the pub stories. Somebody went into the pub and found this dog, you know, playing poker with his mate. And he went and said, wow, that really is a very, very, very smart dog who can play poker. And the other said, he's not smart. Every time he gets a good hand, he wags his tail. That's a joke. Not a bad one. Anyway, so when you have anything like that, just allow it to be. Don't fight it. Fighting it makes it get worse. Why do we fight it? Because we feel ashamed about it. It's not what we're supposed to do. So, just let go. What is the difference between hearing sense and hearing consciousness? Sight sense and sight consciousness. Okay. Like sight sense, you have eyes. That's the sign, and all the optic nerves or whatever. Now close your eyes. And after a while, the sense of sight turns off. You can't see anymore. Not even seeing the inside of your eyelids. If it doesn't move, after a while it turns off. What's the difference between the computer and what happens on the screen? When things are turned on, you click it on, then sort of you have the sight, the so-called the sight base. You have the basis, you know, the hardware and the software, and the hardware and the software come together, and it's a click of the mouse, that's engagement, then it turns on. I don't know really what I'm talking about with IT, but that's the best I could do. How advanced was your meditation when you decided to get ordained? I became ordained because my mum. You've seen pictures of me when I was young, all these little books. I had really long hair. And my mother kept on saying, get your hair cut. So I did. And she said, that's not what I meant. And I also became a monk to forget. I fell in love. And my heart was broken when she chose another guy and not me. And I became a monk to forget. Isn't that romantic? Unfortunately, it's not true. No, just meditation. When you get a taste of the bliss better than sex. Now that was what really blew me away. And people actually say you shouldn't speak like that, Ajahn Brahm, but look, it's true. You know, that just, why? You know, it's such a happiness which is better than, you know, orgasm. And that was weird. And I was really quite disturbed that no one had ever told me about it before. Find it out for myself. You get sex education, we have to come to this place to get meditation education. And that's why. And so I became a monk to actually investigate that further, find out what the heck's going on. Why is it you just get such beautiful delight and a totally different flavour, just totally freeing, not exciting, but very peaceful. So that's why, one of the reasons why I became a monk. But as I said, that I became a monk thinking that, you know, 1 or 2 years, get enlightenment out of the way, you know, tick that box off, become enlightened, and I can actually start a family and get a job. And this. That's how much I knew about what enlightenment was. Had you let go of someone who you are not ready to let go of, but he or she has already moved on with their life? In other words, they've let go of you, you haven't let go of them. So you're pretty nuts, aren't you, if you just, you know, everybody let go of you. It's just like, how do you let go of your body when your body's let go of you? Which means you're dead, but you haven't let go, which means you become a ghost. That's what ghosts are. The body's let go of them, but they haven't let go of the body and all their stuff. They tend to linger around, protecting stuff. So, ghost story. Always like ghost stories. You're not ready to let go, but they've let go of you. This was the one I told the other. I don't think I told you this story, but somebody, they brought this up because it was the Mooncake Festival. And did I tell the Mooncake story here? Okay. This was first 2 or 3 years in Thailand that there was a. One of our disciples who come to the temple was actually owned the Mooncake, you know, the cookie shop. over in Ubon. That was a nice little, when he came and offered all the Western monks and mooncakes. There's no spice in it, so my tummy was fine. And it wasn't boiled frogs. So, we quite look forward to those little mooncakes. So, he would come and offer. And one evening, he came to the temple and he said, "Can I stay here overnight?" I said, "Yeah, sure." And so, that was like late in the afternoon. And just about an hour after I'd given him permission to stay the night, one of his friends, who was the station master at Bung Wai Station, a very small station, very close to Wat Nanachan. And he came and said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I decided to stay here the night." He said, "Come and stay with me. It's much more comfortable. And also, you can have something to eat as well." So he talked him into staying at the station house. And that night, that fellow who wanted to stay in the monastery died. It was really interesting. It was almost like subconsciously he knew that his time was up and he wanted to die in the monastery. But no, he didn't know. There was nothing wrong with him. No signs of any sickness. He just passed away like that in the monastery. Not in the monastery, but in the station house. But he wanted to pass away in the monastery. So anyway, we did a funeral. But a few days later, the station master, because, he had a pretty good education to get that job, he was helping one of the girls in the village, a young teenage girl, with her English homework. And as he was helping her with her English homework, she suddenly screamed and passed out. And when she came conscious again, she wouldn't look at the station master. His name was Somchai. He wouldn't look at all at him. And they realized that something weird was going on. So, next door was the oldest woman in the village. In their 80s. Someone who'd been there, seen that. So they called her in and she knew exactly what was going on. "Who are you? Who are you? What do you want?" She said to this little girl. And the girl started speaking. Not in her voice. In a weird voice, the voice of the person who owned the cookie factory, who was dead. And it turned out she was very upset. He was very upset. Very upset for two reasons. First of all, this Somchai fellow had encouraged him to die at the station house when he was meant to die at the monastery. And number two, he didn't do the funeral ceremony properly. And why? Because it was done according to Thai tradition instead of Chinese tradition. He was a Chinese Thai. And so he said, "You should have got a pig's head for the funeral." And they said, "Well, where have you been all this time?" He said, "In the mango tree by the station." That's where he was staying for a while, as a ghost. And so, having said what he needed to say, then the girl passed out. Now when she came to again, no recollection of what she'd been saying. The last thing she knew, she looked down the stairs and she saw the ghost coming up, which is why she screamed. So, the next day he came to the temple, told us, what should I do? Get a pig's head and put it by the mango tree. And that was the last, no more problems at all. I think we did some chanting there as well, and that was it. And that, that was the origin of what you now know in the West as the cookie monster. All started with mooncakes in Northeast Thailand many years ago. The apparently Cookie Monster is in Sesame Street. Is it Sesame? Because I never watched that. It was after my time. So I didn't really know that. But that's actually the origin story. Interesting. But that's, the the person that, you know, the body had let go of him, he was dead, but he hadn't let go of, you know, the body and how it should be done and this and that. So that's one of the problems. So if it's they're still alive, and they've let go of you, they get moved on with their life, you're just living in the past. Be kind to the past. So that way, you actually don't move on. You're actually here all the time, instead of lingering on with all this past. What would have happened if? What would have happened if? There was another story of this guy, and he was at the cemetery, and he was crying and crying at this graveside, and it was he was a man, and the guy who died was also a man. And he said, "Was this your brother or your father?" He said, "No, it was my wife's first husband. If he hadn't have died, I'd be happy." "Why did you die? Why did you die?" "My wife's first husband. He passed away." Another joke. So, move on. It's just, why? How do you let go of someone who you're not ready to let go of? You can make the choice anytime you want. Letting go is a choice which you can make. You don't have to carry the past. You can let go any time. Just like I say, the doors of hell are open. You can walk out whenever you want to. But people don't want to walk out. There was, I remember going to this grief and loss conference years ago. And over here in Perth, there was a serial killer years ago. I think they've found him after all these years. The Claremont Killers, they called them. And one of the mothers of that, she was at this grief and loss conference where I was speaking at. And I was teaching people how to let go of the past, the grief and loss, and move on with your life. And after giving her some really good teachings, people really appreciated that. They actually work. But she came up to me, almost like, you know, eyeball to eyeball, nose to nose. You know, really confronting me. But she was very angry, and she said to me, "You have got no right to take away my grief." That's what she said. And I thought, my goodness, you know, I've got no right to release you from prison, to release you from suffering. She was so used to her suffering, because her suffering of being a grieving mother of a very famous murder gave her a lot of sympathy, a lot of entry to many of these conferences. It was who she was. I was taking away her sense of self. The one who was grieving. The victim. Sometimes people get really engaged with being a victim. You do get sometimes some benefits from it. Otherwise, you would let it go very easily. She didn't want to be free. She was afraid of being somebody else. Anyway, you're ready to let go. You're always ready to let go. The doors are always open. Make the choice. What about curiosity of the Dhamma? I always say that curiosity killed the cat. How did that happen anyway? Cats usually have seven lives. So anyway, where does that fall in the makeup of substance of things? Is it the fuel? Oh, the curiosity of the Dhamma. We say we explore the Dhamma, but if you don't know where to explore, then after a while you don't find anything. So, people always, oh, what was it? There was, there was this Mullah Nasruddin story. He had lost his key, and he was looking under a lamppost for it. He says, "Have you found your key yet?" "No, no." He said, "Where did you lose it?" "Oh, I lost it up the street over there." "Well, why are you looking under the lamppost?" He said, "Because it's light here." (Laughter) So I found some really interesting teachers. Curious about the Dhamma. If you really, really want to find the Dhamma, don't be curious yet. Be curious about stillness. Curious about peace. Curious about what kindness is. Do we know what kindness is? What compassion is? What loving kindness is? Many people think they know, but they don't. So after a while, I think tomorrow morning I'll tell you how to find out what karma is, what letting go is. Because that's one question which a lot of people ask. How do you let go? Yeah, we're not supposed to let go. Come on, let go. Come on, let go. Let go, I'm telling you. Of course, that's not letting go. So anyway, the fuel, the curiosity of the Dhamma, it's not really the truth you're looking at. You're looking at the wrong place, and so it keeps things going and going and going. In the Four Noble Truths lecture earlier today, it said to relinquish all acquisitions, all acquired. If that is the case, what is the point of acquiring knowledge? It's incredibly true. Pointless. Really? Everything. No. I did such hard work getting a degree in theoretical physics. What's the point of that? Actually, it gives me some cred. That's about all from people. So, oh, you went to Cambridge. Oh, that's really good. But many other people went to Cambridge who were stupid. What's the point of that? Anyway, because what knowledge does, it usually stands in the way of truth. This can't be right. It's not in the books. That's one of the reasons why that when you get new discoveries, it takes so many years for people to agree that it's actually, this is true, it works. But many people say, no, this can't be true because it's not in the book. Because our master never said so. Because the professors don't believe in it. For example, the knowledge of, say, ghosts. That's a lot of it. People that believe in ghosts, they are just, what are they? They're just gullible. There are no such things. Right? I think I mentioned, oh no, I didn't mention that. I used to have this friend, Abbot Placid. He was the head of the Benedictine monastery up in Eunorcia. And we were good mates, and so we were walking through the old monastery together, some of the old parts. And I was saying, wow, this is such an old building. Actually the first buildings in Western Australia. And I said, are there any ghosts here? And he said, I'm a Catholic, we don't believe in ghosts. What about the Holy Ghost thing? got you. Don't mess around like that, good mates. We actually remember going to the first ordination of a female priest, a vicar over in St. George. She's now the first bishop. And you think these ordination ceremonies in Buddhism take a long time. This took 2 hours. 2 hours, this ordination ceremony. And so I was sitting, no, this was in the cathedral up in Perth, in the heretics pew. So I was sitting, no, this is Anglican ordination, and I was sitting next to Abbot Placid, who's representing the Catholics, and the head of the Uniting Church. And after a couple of, you know, I don't know, about 10, 20 minutes, he was saying, it's so boring. So we started joking, saying jokes to each other. Now, if we weren't sort of religious leaders, we'd get kicked out of the church for misbehaving. But because, you know, two abbots and the head of the Uniting Church in Perth, you know, we can get away with anything. It's like three naughty boys. That's what it was like. But it's great. So yes, I really love that guy. It was really good fun. So anyway, the acquiring of knowledge. Wouldn't it be best not to acquire knowledge in the first place? Not to stick to the knowledge. Not to attach to it. Just actually be with it. but it's always work in progress. I said this to someone, I think today, that there was this doctor he was taking me up to Wat Buddha Dhamma many years ago to teach a retreat. And he said he did his medical training at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital over in Sydney. And he'll never forget the head of the medical school, who was a very famous doctor apparently. And that famous doctor welcomed the new intake of medical students with the words, 50% of what we're going to teach you in the next 4 years is wrong. It's wrong. My problem is I don't know which 50% it is. Now that's a scientist. That's somebody who really sort of understands what knowledge is. Work in progress. Even with the Dhamma. Four Noble Truths. You know the Four Noble Truths? And I said, do you? Knowledge, yes. But experience, real true knowledge, acquiring the knowledge, sometimes it stands in the way of truth. So according to many scientists, ghosts don't exist. Then you see them. They do exist. But they're kind, they're nice. The ghosts who come to this place have to observe 5 precepts. What? There's no ghost here. When we meditate, should we be observing the breath or the sensations in the body? Why one and not the other, or observe both? So you don't make your will, I've got to watch my breath, or I've got to watch my sensations. Because you watch whatever happens to be there at this moment. Present moment awareness. What's here? Right now. That's what you're aware of. And you make peace with it. You're kind, you're gentle. I'll make much more of this later on, but what you are aware of is not that important. What you're aware of right now is a result of old karma, past karma. It's here, this is it. It's come up. What I must be very careful of is how I relate to this. Don't make bad karma with what you've got right now. I don't want this. It's not good enough. The breath isn't going the right way. It's too rough. It's not even the breath. I'm just watching stupid thoughts. Those stupid thoughts have come up. This old karma. They're here now. Stupid thoughts. What am I going to do with stupid thoughts? Try and get rid of them? It's like making them worse. Like the monster in the Emperor's Palace. Whatever's coming up now, make peace, be kind, be gentle with it. Make peace with this. You're making good meditation karma in this moment with what you're experiencing right now. That's one thing which I have 100% confidence in, the law of karma. If you make peace in this moment, you're going to get peaceful. You're making the karmic causes for peace coming next. Get out of here, you don't belong. That's aversion, that's violence. And what the result of that is, you're going to be really tense and upset. So, make peace, be kind. Stupid thoughts, it's okay, it's just because PMS or it's whatever it is, post-traumatic stress. That's why we don't do chanting, because the chanting in Thailand was so terrible that it's traumatized me, and I got all these flashbacks to hours of chanting, and it just totally discordant. That's why it's very good to actually get rid of ghosts. Our chanting was the best to get rid of ghosts, because no self-respecting ghost could actually stand our chanting. It's so awful. They run away quickly. So imagine that beautiful chanting, some of these, like the Gregorian chant, these Benedictines, they're just so beautiful and nice. Of course, that attracts ghosts. Oh, come and listen. Hey, what am I doing here? So, observe whatever happens to be in front of the mind right now, and make peace, be calm, be gentle. I have a hyperactive mind. No, you don't. You don't own anything. It's not yours. If the mind is hyperactive, nanya. None of business. Hyperactive? Not my mind. Isn't that wonderful? It's not mine. So you don't have to do anything. When you try and stop it, it gets worse. That is that thinks non-stop. No, that is who introduced this magic word, gomaya. If you haven't heard this word before, many of you have heard it. Go is the Pali word for ball. Mayang is what comes out of the back end of a ball. No, shit. So instead of actually upsetting people by using coarse words, bullshit, I use a Pali equivalent, gomayang. So now you know what gomayang is and you know what I mean. Okay, because I'd get away with it that way. So, your mind thinks non-stop. That's gomayang. That's not true. The point is, you never actually notice when the mind is not thinking. You only notice things, not the space between my words. You are often still, but you don't notice it. Yeah, this hall is very full, isn't it? Is it? If you notice all the people, yeah, you can count the people. But what about the spaces between the people? All the emptiness between the ceiling and the floor and the four walls and the people. There's more emptiness in this room than there are things. But we've been trained just to notice things, not the spaces between the things. Just like we've been learned how to notice the thoughts, the events which we call thoughts, rather than what's before the thoughts or what's after, before the next thought begins. So, see if you can be more mindful of the spaces between your words and thoughts. It's a nice little technique. And that proves that your mind is not non-stop. It does stop. You just don't notice it. Many times, unaware of thinking after a long time, as awareness this week, I may spend hours sitting and thinking instead of focus on present moment. If you try to focus on the present moment, it doesn't matter what's there in the present moment. It might be a thought. Just be aware of it. Make peace with it. Oh, nice thought. Well, thank you for coming to visit me. I know, it's a stupid thought, but you notice it's not up to me to judge. You know, there's so much stereotyping. This thought is right and this thought is wrong. It's just discriminating one thought to another thought. If you think of a Buddha, that's really good. If you think of killing Ajahn Brahm, that's bad. That's discrimination. So, just leave the thoughts alone. And then after a while, the thoughts will have no fuel. And sometimes I just used to... Okay, my goodness. I can go on and on and on. But sometimes I started wondering, why do I think? Because you know that most of the thoughts are totally useless. Total waste of time. Don't get anywhere. So, after a while, I thought, why do I think? Because I wasn't used to silence. I was afraid of it. So you just start to taste silence, be peaceful, and then you get addicted to it. It's a nice thing to get addicted to letting go, to being silent. It's much more beautiful than thinking. And if you want to find solutions to problems, most solutions to problems come from silence, not from thinking. I always like when these great breakthroughs in science actually come when people are just, they're not really thinking about the problem. The mind is silent and answers come up. Wisdom from silence. I love that. Anyway, that's awareness of the week. I may spend hours sitting and thinking instead of focus on present moment. Don't focus on present moment. Just let the present moment focus on you. What can I do to raise awareness and bring back the present moment? If you keep bringing it back, it doesn't work. Control freak. Be kind to your mind. Say, mind, what do you want to do? Do you want to think about this, think about that? It's, oh, yeah, thank you very much. And if you're kind to it, then it stays with you. Also, it's found out that all those thoughts which come up, you know, it was, again, because my mind was running away from present moment. Why is it running away? Because I treated it very badly. Controlled it. Treated it like a slave. It was mind abuse. We have Royal Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Children, Royal Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Nuns. We don't have that yet. But what I really want to start a society, Royal Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Brains. You give your mind such a hard time. Try to train it. Don't try and train your mind. Love your mind. If you love your mind, then your mind doesn't want to go anywhere. It wants to stay with you. If you try and train it and control it, it'll run away at the first opportunity. It's mind abuse. Anyway, there we go. Can you elaborate how to put in thoughts that ends the thoughts? Yep. That's how to do it. How do we balance just letting go, using anatta, and working through emotions when memories surface? Oh, why do the memories surface anyway? Quite often it is because you're looking something to do. You're bored. The mind is bored. Just like when, you know, you may go home, have a free weekend, and you look at the TV, see what's on. When I grew up, we only had two channels, ITV, BBC. Not much choice. But, you know, sometimes fight tooth and nail on who gets to see what. But you've got, how many channels these days? 60, 100 channels, you know, nothing on. What the heck are you talking about? Nothing on. So you just go to the refrigerator, and stuff falls out, nothing to eat. And nowhere to go. There's plenty of stuff there, but the point is you're bored. That's the only thing. So what happens with the mind? If you don't know how to appreciate the present moment, you go here saying, nothing really to do, nothing to think about. So you usually go into the interesting thoughts, first of all, like Dhamma. Because, you know, you feel like quite justified in thinking about Four Noble Truths or what Ajahn Brahm just said. And then, when that doesn't satisfy you, then you go into any other thought which happens. You go through the whole back catalogue of your memories and dreams and fantasies, working through them again and again and again. So, first of all, the good ones come up. If they don't satisfy you, then anyone will come up. Anything to escape. Even old emotions, which basically done and dusted, but you want to go through them again. We're afraid of emptiness, of just nothing being there, anything to fill up a space. That's why you go and see, you know, just like even this place here. You know, it's really hard to keep this place free of all sorts of paraphernalia and flowers and knick-knacks and photographs and images. You go to some of these temples and it's impossible to clean the shrine. Even now, the shrine up in in Bodhinyana Monastery, people keep putting stuff on there. Can't you just leave it alone? And then they have a beautiful mountain. You know what they do on top? First person gets on top there, they put a flag. And that's just the start. After the flag, then comes a restaurant. After the restaurant, a mobile phone tower. And then a shop selling knickknacks. There's a beautiful empty mountain. Why do you have to fill things up? You got your house. Look, Singapore apartments, they're not that big, are they? And they're already cluttered. So why do you want to put more things in there? Because people don't like space. Look, an empty, look, a nice picture will go well over there, yeah. Imagine just interior designers. This room here, you know, you can do so much with this. Leave it alone. Keep it simple. So that's actually why working through emotions when memory surface. Let them surface. Don't need to work through them. Just let them be like angry eating monsters. Oh, welcome, old emotion. Thank you for coming here. And just you watch it and it soon disappears. Please describe the first time you had a deep meditation. Oh, that was so many lifetimes. I better be careful. The first time. How important is form and structure in meditation? For example, is it best to sit on the floor, legs folded, versus sitting in the chair? Oh, thank you for asking that question. As long as you are comfortable, you work with your body. If you want to train your body to be able to sit full lotus, then go do some yoga. If you want to actually to learn how to sit for long periods of time in what's called prolonged stress positions, go to Guantanamo Bay. That's what you do there. So as long as your body is comfortable. When you do go to India to go on a pilgrimage, if you manage to get to Nalanda, the old university, there's wonderful old carvings of the Buddha sitting on a chair. It was all right for the Buddha to sit on a chair. You trying to do better than the Buddha by sitting on the floor? Who do you think you are? So in other words, the whole point of a comfortable posture is so you can let it go. So the body can be comfortable and you can disappear and get into the realm of the mind. Maybe say more about that tomorrow. What advice are retreatants who are addicted to talking and their mobile phones? If you're addicted to talking, we do have masking tape. And we put a little hole in the masking tape where we put a straw. So you can still drink or, you know, have some fluids. So what you do is sometimes you see someone talking and you go up and say, be quiet. And that's two people talking. So we have in the West what we call the one finger sign. You know the one finger sign when someone's talking? Not the one finger sign you were thinking about, but... So just remind them to be quiet. So because you might want to speak, but you're actually intruding on somebody else's silence. So don't talk. So in the cottages, especially, you should be quiet. No talking in the cottages. In this area, and in the dining area, please be quiet. In the kitchen, sometimes you have to talk to actually to help instructors. Can you help me? Because you know the water's boiling. You don't try and mime it. You won't understand what's going on. So if there's something to be said, say it. But don't get into a conversation. Now the water's boiling. Oh yeah, you know the last time the water boiled. And you start all sorts of anecdotes. And if you really, really, really can't stop talking to one another, Then he can come up here and give the morning talk. Give me a break. Okay, the mobile phones. Now we really, really, really tried hard to get this place with very bad mobile phone reception. But already people have found out the hotspots and the places where you can get a signal. But look, you know, you could confiscate all mobile phones if you wanted to. But it's important. Is it? If you don't check your emails in this retreat for 9 days, is the world going to end? Are you as important as Hillary Clinton? Donald Trump? So it's nice actually to spend time. This is your retreat. You can leave this message on your mobile phone. I'm on retreat. If there is any problems, you can actually you can call Jhana Grove Retreat Center. You've got the telephone there. And Michelle or something will take that call and delete it straight away. No, they won't delete it. We're responsible. So you can actually just leave it alone and find out you can do that. It's a great opportunity for you to actually to stop the addiction to the mobile phone by just not even turning it on or opening it for the next few days. Just give it 3 days, first of all. Just 3 days. Not answering your mobile phone. And see what happens. And you find the world doesn't stop. Everything doesn't go wrong. You are not that important. Sorry. What do you think of the law of attraction? Does it really work? No. Oh, sometimes I have to work really, really hard to raise funds for Anukampa Bhikkhuni Monastery, which is not a monastery yet, it's just an idea. But the law of attraction, just think of it. Can you visualize it? Venerable Chanda. Can you visualize a beautiful, beautiful building just close to St. James's Park, close to Victoria Station, with all this wonderful parking and this beautiful gardens in the back, which is underused by Queen Elizabeth because she's getting old. You can visualize it. Visualize, can you visualize, visualize law of attraction? Can you visualize her handing it over to you? You can dream about it, it doesn't work. You can plant a tree there. It's a forest. Good enough. Concrete jungle. Anyway, so can you visualize a forest? Have you visualized it yet? Has it happened yet? No. Can I jump on and visualize the cheque for £10 million? I can visualize it now. So I could made out to add a Anukampa Bhikkhuni project. I visualize it. That hasn't happened. Remember, it was a drought in Thailand. And that we went through all these old books and found a chant for making rain. And we chanted it and we thought about it. All the only water we got was this old monk had to go quickly to the toilet. That was it. That's all the water we made. So no, I don't believe in the law of attraction. How to cultivate a positive attitude, positive thinking. Just hang out here with the monks, the nuns, and it's called brainwashing. If you're with negative people, then you get negative as well. But with positive people, whenever you see the pile of shit, you realize, you always remember the worm. And you're positive. Poor worm. But whenever your girlfriend dumps you. So, that was how Ajahn Brahm became a monk. Whoopee! So that's positive thinking. There was, when I went to United States quite a few years ago now, I read an article, I think it was on the aircraft going there, about a fellow who was making a fortune in New York. And he actually had franchises all over New York, and it was how to train your dogs and cats to poo in the right place. Because, you know, most people are living in apartments. If you're living in an apartment, you know, you can't sort of let your cat and dog do its business sort of in, you know, inside the apartment. So how can you train it to go outside and do it in the park or, you know, the right places? So they had this person, charged quite a bit of money, and they would take, say, the little young dog, the young puppy, out into a tree or into a park, and they'd wait and wait. And when that little dog pooed in the right place, they would actually just jump up and down with joy. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. They'd do cartwheels and sing a happy song. And they really went over the top celebrating the puppy doing its business in the right place. And even though the dog, you know, didn't really understand human language, the dog could understand it made somebody happy. And that was incredibly powerful training. And, you know, so cats, dogs, they would over-the-top celebrate when they did it in the right place, so they wouldn't actually do it in the apartment. Everything was going fine, and when I went to the West Coast, that's when somebody told me his business had gone sort of nosedived, because people found out, yeah, it was very effective for a while, but the owner in the apartment in New York somewhere was just watching a baseball game, and when their team sort of, you know, hit a home run, the owner would jump up and down, yes! And that's when the dog would poo in the apartment. It was positive reinforcement gone wrong. Anyway, my next question. What advice for retreatants who are addicted to talking about... I did that one already. Is that the same one? No. Put it in the wrong place. In the three refuges, what is the content of refuges? In what qualities or things does one take refuge? What does refuge mean? It means that you have a women's refuge, a men's refuge. It's a place of safety, a place where you can rely upon. And actually, it's sometimes a place of safety, security. So the Buddha, the Dhamma, the teacher, and the Sangha. When the Sangha, people make a big mistake of taking refuge in a monk or a master or a mistress. That's the female monks. Male teachers are called masters, aren't they? So female teachers are called mistresses. Isn't that the case? Do you have a specific, do you call female teachers, great Buddhist nuns, do you call them masters too? But that is gender specific, because master, you know, means male, should be mistress. So I remember going to Hong Kong once and having a debate or just a nice discussion with a Zen master, and it was a title Meeting of Two Masters. And then I said, well, next time you get a nun, and you say a master meeting with his mistress. I'm sure many people have gone to that one. Very good. They just didn't understand my marketing techniques. How can knowing past lives helping one's practice? Oh, it does help, because you understand the results of good karma and bad karma. So if you do remember the past lives, sometimes what is the cause, you know, that people are wealthy? Because they were generous in their past lives. It's as if life understands if you use your money just for your own safety or your own pleasures, it's, you know, not the really best use of the money. But if you do it for good causes, like building a nun's monastery or whatever, it's actually a beautiful use of that money, which means that it's almost entrusted to you again, next lifetime. Basically, you know how it works, and so you know how to do things. It's also the case that people would actually say, why are some people just so beautiful and other people are just ugly. It doesn't matter how many makeovers they do, still they're ugly. And there's a reason for that. And the Buddha said it's because, you know, the precepts. If you keep your precepts and really kind, good people, then you get a nice kindness. That's the reason for beautiful. But the main one was, why are people stupid in their next lives and other people intelligent in their next lives? And this was one of the reasons why that I encourage questions, because if you want to be intelligent in your next life, you have to ask questions. I always like that, because Buddhism encourages questioning. So you don't just sit there and just take it and believe it without question. It's encouraging it, because that's actually you get to the truth. So past lives help one practice, one see where it all comes from. So just you can't get away with anything. Dear Ajahn Brahm, suffering arising. If there is no I, then why is it so hard to meditate, and why meditate at all? Meditation is not doing anything. It's a default state. It's a place where you rest. So if I'm tired, I don't try to relax. That just makes you more tense. So instead you sit there, close your eyes, and just be here. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. I don't meditate. I just vanish, and then meditation happens. So, yes, there is no I, but you don't believe that. Which means you always practice from a state of I, which means that it is always difficult. If you could really realize this, a good example of that, okay, I'll ask a little bit, is a little meditation technique you may try. It's a bit late now, but maybe tomorrow morning if you remember it. You meditate, you come in here, sit down, close your eyes, and just imagine, role play, that you're already enlightened, that you're a Buddha, sitting under a Bodhi tree. You know, when I used to go to, when I went to school, I remember just the teacher saying, this is private school, imagine you're a tree, and you put your hand out, swaying in the wind. You know, people still do that. And I remember when I went to that flowers at that preschool in Singapore, run by one of the old Buddhist fellowship members. What is it called? My little gems, yeah. And so, you know, it's hard enough teaching you guys, but teaching little kids, you say, sit down, and they will never do that. So, we did this, it was Waysack time, or close to Waysack, close enough, and said, okay, like, imagine you are the Buddha taking 7 steps. And I could do that, 7 steps. I'm putting your finger up, not that one, but this one. This is my last one. And they could all do that. So they role played, acted out, and they could actually understand just, you know, the Lumbini and the birth of the Buddha. Now, okay, enlightenment. Sit down under a tree. No, sit down. Imagine you're under a tree. Imagine you're the Buddha. And they all could do that. You tell them to meditate, they won't. Imagine you're a Buddha. Imagine it. You're under the tree there. And they're all getting into it. And the one they like the best is, you know, just when you're at Parinirvana in Kusinara. So lay down and imagine. So you can see that kids can do that, and you can do that too. So imagine that you are the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, fully enlightened. You don't have to do anything anymore. Everything which was there to achieve, you've done that. You don't have to try anymore. There's no goals to reach. Nothing you need to attain anymore. Imagine what that's like. You start to build it up. Imagine, for those of you who've been to Bodh Gaya, imagine a beautiful Bodhi tree. You know, before those people were there, just the river Nirvana, just in the beautiful water, the warm breeze just blowing over the river and just keeping you cool under the shade of the Bodhi tree, just sitting there. Everything has been achieved. Nothing more to do. really relaxed, like it's a holiday, like a retirement. You put down every work, no more concerns, everything is finished. No worries for the future, everything is done. You can get into it, can't you? You get a feel what it must be like to be a Buddha. So you start from there, and then it's carry on. It's like a head start. So it's a nice little thing to do. So you can try that every now and again, just at the very beginning. But don't go down, oh, what I'm talking, I can't be a Buddha. But just enjoy it, get into it. Bit of role play, play acting, it really works. So, it's not you anymore. It's not Venerable Chanda meditating. It's the Buddha meditating. Oh, this is really cool. So, try that, skillful means. Okie dokie. And the next skillful means is finishing at the right time. It's 9:20. So enough time for you to imagine you're the Buddha. Remember sleeping. Are you going to go back to your rooms and sleep now? You'll have plenty of time to catch up with your sleep when you're in your coffin. You paid a lot of money to come on this retreat, so get your money's worth. No, don't be too harsh on yourself. Find a middle way. Ask your body, do you want to go to sleep now? Or are you energized enough to meditate? Mind, what do you want to do? Don't treat your body and mind like a maid, like a servant. Treat it like a sister, like a brother. Someone you love and care for. And then they'll always be with you. You're kind to your body, and your body's kind to you. You ask your mind what your mind wants. And somebody says, oh, you had enough today. I want to sleep. And then the next moment, you come up in the morning. Mind, what do you want to do? Thank you so much for giving me a rest. Now I want to do what you want to do. So let's meditate together. No force, no control. It's beautiful working together in peace and harmony. That's how you get very, very deep meditation. Okay, there we go. There's many more nights to go, so you don't have to push yourself yet. Towards the end of the retreat, you haven't got anything, but you're not supposed to get anything, so you're very successful when you don't get things. Anyway, enlightenment, you know, if one of the nice things about remembering your past life, yeah, the past lives exist, so you don't have to be in such a rush. If you don't get enlightenment in this life, you've got another life coming soon. So just relax, take it easy, don't strive, enjoy. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, don't always stick to tradition. Okay, very good. So have a nice night. See you in the morning, maybe. Oops.
You're not there. You just sit in front. Okay. You moved on in life. Then I'll eat my words.